Dr. Nkosana Mweu, Executive Chairman of the Mandela Institute for Development Studies. We're at the CAPE 2012 conference looking at development cooperation in tomorrow's world. You spoke on the opening session this morning, gave some very interesting insights and perspectives. One of the first things you said was that you're not sure that the statistics which people produce in relation to Africa's performance over the last decade are actually matched on the ground. So what is your assessment of Africa's progress in the last decade or so?
Just to put it into context, thank you very much for talking to me. I pointed out to people that when the North African Revolution started happening, they started in Tunisia, and I was in Tunis right through, and that all of us in the development world were giving Tunisia top marks for achievement in this space, and all of a sudden this thing blew up in our faces. And what we've since gotten to understand is that those gross numbers or aggregate numbers do not really tell you what's going on at the micro level to individuals and to communities and so on, and that's what happened to the youth. The youth, although the country was performing well in terms of those development statistics, clearly the youth were not participating in this. So that was a major lesson. And I also, as an aside and almost as a joke, I quoted a professor who talked to me 2 days ago, who said, you know, between himself and Bill Gates, the average net worth was $18 billion. And then he laughingly said, I can assure you I do not have that kind of money. In other words, again, that's an example of what numbers, how numbers can be meaningless. Lastly, the reason why I made that point as an African is that in the last decade, when you look at publications, Africa is credited with having performed very well. And yeah, even the way Africa withstood the crisis and rebounded, in fact, and how quickly out of the crisis, at aggregate level looks incredibly impressive. But for a start, the problem is this. Today, Africa is 54 countries. And these numbers are averages. And I did mention that I travel within Africa a lot. And when I travel within Africa, what I see on the ground and these numbers do not match. So I was just putting out a health warning out there that, yes, by all means, that's what we have in terms of statistics, but let's be a bit more careful in terms of how we interpret them, what they mean, what they don't tell us, and what we should try go and find out.
And one of the other themes that's being discussed today is the growth in the number of actors in development finance or development cooperation. Yeah. A developing country today has far more options about where to access finance to meet their own development needs than they've had previously. Yeah. This presents opportunities, but obviously needs careful consideration. What do you think developing countries who do face increased options should be thinking about right now?
Yeah. Let's again go back. You say options. One of the things that has always been recognized now for quite some time in development cooperation is the load that development partners, if they are not careful, impose on recipient countries that already have got very limited capacity for managing. So if you've got 10 development partners coming to country X, and each one of those 10 he's got individual and different requirements of how to engage. This poor country, which is supposed to be getting development assistance, all of a sudden actually is being completely swamped in terms of attention. The civil servants, instead of paying attention to the job that they're supposed to be doing, they spend all their time writing reports for the development cooperation partners. And this has been recognized for quite some time now. And so there has been a move for a while now about harmonization, what is called harmonization, simply meaning that development partners interacting with a particular recipient country or community should attempt as much as possible to get together and develop one instrument of interaction with that recipient country. Now, the danger, therefore, in this proliferation of development cooperation partners is that if they, as incidental, who are they? So you've got the traditional ones in terms of where the aid is normally come from traditionally. We've got new ones like China. Then we've got non-state foundations and philanthropists also coming to the table. And their point of departure is very, very different because of the way who they've got to go and account to. Yeah? And because of that difference, their demands in terms of how they are going to interact with the recipient countries is much more likely to be different. So one has to say, you are right, in theory, there is more options in terms of where the resources for supporting development are coming from. But there is a much higher risk of literally paralyzing the systems of the recipient countries. So it's a very delicate balance that needs to be managed quite carefully.
And part of the title of the conference, Development in Tomorrow's World, in 10, 20 years' time, what is the biggest change you would like to see in development, cooperation, development, financing?
I would like to see, and again, I'll be quite graphic about this, the way I perceive development cooperation. You know, in English, in your language, you say, when you want to help somebody, it's better to teach them how to fish rather than give them fish. Okay? And for me, that's a general trend I'd like to see, and let me explain why. If you go to a country, country X, and give them support to build clinics or hospitals and schools, but don't give them support to develop their own economy in order for that economy to be able to carry the load of social spending, what you've actually done in the short to medium term is to increase their vulnerability. And we've seen, unfortunately, a couple of examples of this. We've seen it in Malawi. We've seen it at the moment. I think it's actually an ongoing issue with Rwanda. Good intentions engage, facilitate the development of these social institutions, and then something goes wrong, either because you, the source of the funding, you have your own problems and you start pulling back in terms of the availability of that funding. What happens to what you built out there becomes actually a burden, because their own economy hasn't got the strength to carry those obligations. So what I would like to see is a much more conscious and deliberate effort to skew things towards helping economies become more robust, and almost as a secondary issue for those economies to then have their own capacity to spend putting money into their social institutions. That's what I would like to see.
And just very quickly, finally, can you tell me a bit about the role that the Mandela Institute for Development Studies will be playing in this?
Making people aware of the dangers of this, the first type of intervention, and pointing out why it's preferable to develop the robustness of their own economies in order to become less vulnerable.
Dr. Moyo, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.